You're listening to The Higher Ed Marketer, the podcast for marketing professionals in higher education. Join us every week as we talk to the industry's greatest minds in student recruitment, donor relations, marketing trends, new technologies, and much more. If you're looking for conversations centered around where marketing in higher ed is going, this podcast is for you. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to the Higher Ed Marketer Podcast. I'm Troy Singer.
And I'm Bart Kaler.
And today we talked to Dave Hunt from Old Dominion University, and we make the case for generative AI for creative teams.
Troy, I really enjoyed having Dave on the show. I think that the idea of really kind of being a creative myself and then having Dave be a creative and talking about generative AI, I mean, man, what a great Friday afternoon to do. What I really appreciate about Dave is that he kind of comes at it with both the practitioner, the leadership perspective, as well as just kind of understanding the tools because he's been in it pretty deep. And so we have a great conversation about, you know, some tips and tricks for AI, but also just how to, you know, bring your team or your school around to kind of understanding a little bit more about these amazing tools and what the possibilities are.
Yes, again, we're talking to Dave Hunt, Director of Digital Marketing, Communications, and Creative Director at Old Dominion University. And here's our conversation with him. Dave, we are flattered that you are a regular listener on the show, so you know what I'm getting ready to ask you. And that is, as we go into our conversation, if you would share something interesting or fun that you've learned recently that you feel our listeners would benefit from.
Absolutely. And yes, I've been preparing for this ever since you all invited me. So I'm landing on something that I think will hopefully be fun. I'm kind of late to discover this, but in the original Super Mario Brothers video game, there's a little fanfare that plays when you reach the end of each level. Mm-hmm. And if you take that fanfare and you remove the last few notes, and then you speed it up by a factor of around 4, you actually get the sound effect that plays when Mario collects a mushroom power-up throughout the game. And they did this because memory on game cartridges was at such a high premium 40 years ago. And it took less memory for them to write mathematical instructions to say, play this already existing thing 4 times faster than to code in something completely unique that would take up more memory. So I would have described both those sounds as iconic video game sound effects from my childhood, but it wasn't until the last few days that I realized they're the exact same sound. Somebody just sped this up. So I love discovering little hacks like this that people create in the face of technology constraints. And as a creative director, I love seeing how people deal with those constraints, regardless of what kind of creative pursuit they might be in. Because so much of creativity is really just problem solving and finding interesting solutions for those inherent constraints with whatever you're trying to accomplish.
That's great.
Before you had that last little description, I was going to say that that answer was right on brand as a digital marketing communications leader and creative director at a higher ed institutions. So wonderful.
That's wonderful. I had random facts about T-Rexes and all sorts of things like running through my head as I was preparing for this. But then I learned that little Mario technology thing and that felt good.
Answers like that is one of the reasons why we are so looking forward to having this conversation with you, Dave. And the topic that we agreed to talk about is embracing AI, transformational strategies for creative teams. And again, we've had AI conversations before, but this one's going to be particular on how to enhance and get your team to embrace AI for the betterment of your institution. Before we go into the 4 strategies that you are going to speak on, if you could give us a little bit of insight on you and the work that you do at Old Dominion.
So I am currently the creative director for the ODU Global team, which is our online programs from Old Dominion University. I supervise a team of around 6. We have just expanded. Our 6th person is starting next week, actually. So I have a social media project manager, a design folks, and a content strategist. And we are primarily focused on doing marketing that really helps move the enrollment needle. We're on our way to doubling our online enrollment over the next 5 years. And so that's a very big mission. So that's kind of where I'm focused. So in the past, I have worn multiple seats related to marketing and communications, including some where I was in a more specific design role and others where I've been more specific with digital marketing or other aspects of that. But this kind of marries those things together in a fun way. So I'm really excited about the team that we have and the goals and the leadership that we have at ODU.
Thank you very much. And Dave, I do want to get into our topic of making sure that we offer strategies to help leverage AI on a creative team. And one of those topics that we should start right out with is overcoming initial resistance to AI. So would love to know, in your opinion, how teams can navigate that initial resistance to AI and foster a culture of experimentation or maybe even acceptance to AI.
Yeah, so I'm really interested in this topic. I just saw a stat this week that 92% of Fortune 500 companies are using OpenAI. And I'm really curious. I think there's been increasing adoption in higher ed, but it's such a huge opportunity to level playing fields in a lot of ways. ChatGPT and other AI tools are inexpensive and accessible. And so this is a revolution that's not cost prohibitive for higher education to embrace. So I think actually the smaller your team and the fewer resources you have, the more important it might be for your organization to get on this bandwagon and early. Within creative teams, you know, there should be a culture of experimentation. That should be a defining characteristic of a healthy creative team. That group should be highly interested in AI, but there are times, and I think there are considerations that are making some folks hesitant about that. AI can sometimes feel like it's making what was traditionally difficult work easy. And maybe there's some undervaluing or some undercutting of creative work that's happening there. And then, of course, there's lots of fear about job displacement. But with that, I think there's lots of opportunity. You can transition workers from being in roles where they're having to do more mundane things to things that are more strategic and creative and complex work. And I tell the design folks that I work with all the time, like when I think back to the early stages of my career and the number of hours that led to number of days that I spent just doing something similar, you know, something simple, like trying to isolate somebody out of a background, you know, removing that. And now you just click and drag in Canva or Photoshop. And the time that it takes you to click and drag is something that, you know, in my day, we spent hours, you know, you'd get a cup of coffee and you'd turn on some music and you'd spend 3 hours working on an image. Now you can just have those ideas and execute those things. It's such a huge revolution just there by itself.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, Dave. And I remember the days too of, you know, early in my career, you know, 92 was when I started and they just were dropping Macs on the desks
yes.
at agencies. And I remember one of the assignments I had is that they would go back and they would, what used to be the stats, you know, that they would do with the cameras in the back. Now they put them on a flatbed camera and they said, okay, Bart, you need to recreate the AT&T logo in digital. You know, and so I, you know, you were zooming in really big yeah. and creating the vector file. And I was using freehand. I mean, that's what it was before Illustrator. And then today, I mean, I can take a PNG and just download it to vectorizer.ai. And in 3 seconds, I've got an EPS or whatever I want. I think the thing that, and to your point, I think that I realize is that, you know, I could be the grandpa that says, I walked uphill both ways to school. Or I can say, isn't it great that these creatives now actually have time to be creative as opposed to, you know, doing manual labor that really the computers can do and should do. And so I think it does. I think, you know, Kyle Campbell said at one of our podcasts that, you know, it's really going to free us up for more creativity. It's going to get a lot of that, you know, extra work out of the way so we can be more creative. So I guess as a follow-up, I'm just curious, as you personally maybe are starting to free up yourself for more creativity because AI can help with some of these things, do you feel like that's an opportunity that maybe you haven't had in your career that's actually refreshing?
I think it's really refreshing. And I think it's really refreshing for my team too. I think, you know, you have opportunities to think about how you might expand and grow in cross-disciplinary ways. Like AI, you know, there's a technology component to AI. There's lots of data science adjacent things like that. And so I think that you see opportunity for people to become more holistic with how they approach creative projects and not just, you know, it's my job to sit here for 3 hours and do this mundane task to make something become real. Like, no, like you can have the ideas, execute them, keep ideating, you know, and if you're interested in exploring AI and technology and all that kind of stuff, I mean, the sky's the limit for what you could potentially learn and what you could do with that. So I'm very fortunate that my team is hungry and eager to embrace those things and find new ways to work and new ways to do things that before may have been something that needed to either be, you know, just off the table because it was going to take too much time or we didn't have, you know, resources. Now we do. So it's very exciting. I mean, I've always loved technology and being able to play around with these things. So it's easy for me to get jazzed on the latest tool, but it's also fun to see a whole creative team finding uses for these things.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm kind of prone to go that direction. I mean, that's why I got into the web when I did. And, you know, even some of the other things have crossed the time. I was always kind of the first one to be, you know, drawn to, you know, the Mac Plus in 1984 and you know, doing that kind of stuff. But I do think there is a reality and kind of getting back to Troy's original question about this whole resistance. I mean, there's the adoption curve as any technology does, but I also think that there are, you know, people that might be kind of in more mature creatives and they might be a little bit further down the path. I mean, I think there is some resistance. And so when you come across that, and I know you've got a very fortunate team, but I know there are people on campus that maybe are not early adopters. How do you help them kind of make it over that initial fear? It's usually fear. How do you help them kind of, you know, start to look at it a little bit differently?
Yeah, I think it starts to get into a little bit of just kind of a change management approach, right? And I tell this story, I never say names, but earlier in my career, I worked with a colleague who had a kind of a cantankerous relationship with my predecessor, and we were able to resolve a lot of things and make so many things better. But at one point, she said that she struggled with the idea that even though things are better now, they're different. So it's like on her scale of good to terrible, different was what was actually at the bottom of the scale.
Yeah.
You know, even if different was better. So you have people like that. AI is probably not the first time you're encountering people like that. No. Those kinds of people pop up all over the place for lots of different things. But I think there are things that you can do, obviously, as a leader, you know, setting an environment where you're open and demonstrating that you're also experimenting and creating and trying and not necessarily always succeeding with things. And then I think you also, for every person who's like that, you usually have somebody like me who's an early adopter or somebody who's at least in the more towards the middle of that adoption curve. And so leveraging your team members, so it's not always you doing the preaching, but finding others who are excited and willing to experiment, and then they can also help evangelize. I think there are some legitimate concerns over things like ethics. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think is all over the place right now, depending on, you know, different audiences are looking at different aspects of that. For a creative team, a lot of it comes down to struggling with this idea of like art being stolen or, you know, repurposed intellectual property, all that kind of stuff. And so I really love that Adobe was smart. I think they kind of had to be given their audience and used Firefly to train it on Adobe stock and open license content and public domain content, stuff like that. So I think you can get over a lot of the ethical hump without being dismissive.
Right.
And then I think, you know, there are ways that you as a leader can identify how the use of those AI tools can directly connect to your broader team goals and challenges. And we're very, very serious about professional development for our employees at ODU, particularly in our division, but I think it's true across the whole university. So, you know, you can connect lots of, you know, carrot and stick sort of like, you know, part of your professional development plan this year is to get comfortable with how you might use this AI tool for this aspect of your job, things like that.
Yeah. And I think it's worth kind of saying you've used the word tool several times. And I want to point that out because a lot of times, and that's one of the things that I really try when I'm doing my presentations, is to help people understand that this is a tool.
Yes.
I mean, last night I did a presentation and I asked the people, I mean, I said, you know, show of hands, how many of you have ever used spell check or Grammarly in your Word document? Well, yeah, everybody raised their hand. It's not a big deal. It's a tool. And I think everybody's gotten used to it being a tool. I think that the next level is people just understanding that this generative AI is just another tool and it doesn't feel the same way as other tools, but I mean, a lot of people in the past, you know, jumping from a typewriter to an electric keyboard or to a computer or to, you know, a word processor, those were big jumps. And I think that that's just part of life in today's world of technology.
So. Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, I do think that some of this will get easier over time as our standard tools, you know, like Adobe products and Microsoft products and Google products, all that stuff gets this baked into it. That's also going to remove some of that
exactly
feel of like, I have to go into a whole different app or do a weird .ai website or, you know, whatever.
Get
like
into
that.
Discord or something.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. I still don't really understand Discord. Yeah. And I don't really want to learn it. I'm waiting for the, like, let me get into an app or a website.
Yeah.
You know, and I hear rumors that Midjourney is going to move to that ultimately.
And we can talk about that, yeah, but that's true. Great.
Earlier, Dave, you mentioned that, you know, part of professional development at ODU might have AI understanding or learning attached to. And I think partly because productivity and increase in productivity to achieve that is so easy if you know how to utilize AI properly. But would like if you could speak to how under a creative team umbrella, how you are either streamlining workflows or maybe increasing project management or even content creation. Could you speak to how you do that within the creative team environment specifically?
Sure. We have an online project management tool that we are using, monday.com, but all of these tools have emerging, rapidly being implemented AI tools. And so we're excited. Like there's a bunch of things that I think are going to be really handy as we have a new project manager join my team that will automate, you know, some of the kind of really rote standard things that you have to do every time you start up a project, all the things, you know, all that setup. That's becoming something that is getting taken over by the ability to use AI to do those things in a more automated way. You may edit what it suggests, you may remove here and there, but it's faster than starting from scratch. So even on the project management side, I think we're already seeing opportunities there to make people's lives easier. But then, of course, generating content is a huge, massive topic. I think from a time-saving standpoint, which we've already talked a little bit about, but also from an inspiration standpoint, kind of like with ChatGPT, where you're in more of a dialogue with it, like that's when it gets, I think, more effective for me, is when you're actually kind of having some pushback and shaping things. I think just the idea of AI as a content partner to think through and give you ideas. It's the same as going to Behance or Pinterest or any of these other things, but it's also generating for you potentially things that are unique that you haven't seen before. So just that by itself, I think, is a really cool thing, as well as, you know, all those sorts of like image editing and background removals and making a horizontal photo vertical so you can use it in a tall ad instead of a wide ad and all those different kinds of things. Yeah, I think there's so much opportunity there. Just from an inspiration standpoint. But that's another thing that I think is going to be a large shift. We've talked about, you know, this idea of being able to do all this work so much faster and people being able to stay at that higher level of creativity. And I think because of that, we're going to need creatives who can curate a bigger sea of ideas that are actually now possible. There were, you know, you see some kind of effect or something fancy and you try to think through like, how am I going to do this? Is it feasible to have, you know, all this work? How many hours is this going to be? Well, now you can stay at that higher level, but you need to be strategic. Make sure that what you're doing is on brand. It's the final execution of it is at the high level that you need. But that initial stage of getting things through initial mock-up and rough execution just to see if it's even feasible is not days now or hours, it's minutes or maybe even seconds. And that's a huge revolution in design.
Yeah, it goes back to, you know, that keeping the creativity moving forward as opposed to turning into, you know, executing tasks. I mean, I remember, you know, I'm going to sound like a grandpa. I remember back in the day where, you know, before we were able to, you know, have digital color printers and everything, I mean, we would mock things up and we were printing it out from the laser printer. And then we had these little, you know, ironing kits that we'd put a Pantone color on it and we'd iron it and we'd get the color. And it was a lot of hand crafting work. And I certainly appreciate the craftsmanship that went into a lot of the graphic design, you know, prior to the computer revolution in my day. Because I mean, there was, you know, brilliant ways of doing marker renderings and things like that, that I think that art has been lost. But I think that the creativity of being able to get the ideas out, I mean, you know, I have a better appreciation today of, you know, when I always had creative directors who, some of them were designers, some of them were writers, but they were always the creative engines. And I think that that opens up a lot more of the creative engines to be able to get their vision out of their head and into some way to kind of communicate it. I mean, that was one of my first ways of using Midjourney, was I had this vision of, I want to show this, you know, this idea of renting an RV for a school and getting a vinyl wrap and taking it to tailgating for high school football games. That would be a great way to do enrollment marketing. But to render that with markers or try to explain that, it was a lot easier to go to Midjourney and just type in a prompt and get a halfway decent realistic image of, you know, high school kids hanging out by an RV and throwing in a few things on Photoshop with their brand. That's a quicker way to get my idea out, to keep moving on creative ideas, as opposed to spending 8 hours trying to, you know, illustrate that to show it.
Yeah, 100%. And I think one of the things that I've been fortunate with my career path and the people that I've worked with throughout my career, I don't come to design with a preciousness about creating art. We're marketing. Like, this is marketing. We're not creating art exhibits. Create art exhibits in your free time. I love art. I love going to museums. I love, you know, being able to experience all of that. But at the end of the day, we are a marketing team. And so it's not about, you know, you want things to be artful. You want things to be artistic, but you're not creating art. You are creating a piece that has a marketing function that needs to, at the end of the day, primarily serve that function above all else. And so I think that helps you also get a little bit less precious with some of the specific techniques that you might use, and being more willing to embrace what tool is going to make this easiest and fastest and best.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, during, you know, throughout my career, I always had a mentor who was my creative director, and he would often say, you know, we would talk about, you know, design competitions. Cause I mean, back in the day, design competitions, like, let's get that sculptured head for the, whatever it was. And he was like, you know what, we're less about wearing the beret, because I feel more like if I move the needle for that company and they achieve their goals for what the marketing was, that's the win. That's the award. And they come back and do more business with us, as opposed to, hey, look at the great, you know, sculpture of the award I have on my wall. But little do you know that that client fired us and we never did any more work with them. And so I think that's part of what this whole thing is that there's this idea of, we can actually get messaging out there, and these tools help us to do that a little bit more effectively. Cool.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about enhancing audience engagement, and specifically around personalization. Would like to know if you have any examples that you were able to utilize AI to do a project or make significant difference or strides within personalization. Do you have any examples that you could share?
Sure. So this actually ties into my first big aha moment with ChatGPT about a year ago. I had come from a university where we were standing up really pretty substantial email journeys for new online programs. We were doing like 30 email journeys that were designed to, you know, if somebody answered or filled out an RFI, or we got them at the early prospect stage and it took them 6 months to a year to actually enroll, we wanted to have a bunch of communication we could send out. And so I had worked through at a prior institution with an outside agency crafting all of that seemingly by hand. I think that they were legitimately writing things weeks of all this effort. And then when I first started really playing with ChatGPT around this time last year, early, you know, January, February, I started realizing like, oh, this thing has memory. And oh, I can put in a bunch of information about this program and it can spit a bunch of things out. And I did all this stuff. I was asking it like, here's a bunch of information on this program we've got. Give me a blog post. Give me social media posts. Give me personas. Give me all this stuff. Not realizing even at first that it was going into its memory. And then I asked it just to see, could you create like a lengthy, you know, 15 email journey for me? And it was doing the things that we had done, man. It was giving us, this one is focused on alumni. This one is focused on students. This one is focused on financial aid, with no prompts, you know, it just blew. That was the first, like, my mind felt like it was literally exploding. I think I like leaned back in my desk and stared at the ceiling, because it was, this changes so much. So many of us in higher ed are not resourced the way those Fortune 500 companies are. And We don't have a staff of dozens or in some cases hundreds for some of these large corporations to be able to do this kind of personalization. Mm-hmm. But being able to now do these things with AI, and of course, yes, they need editing and they need curating and they need to be reviewed and don't just, you know, spit something out that AI generates for you. But how quickly you can give this system some information and have it do some of that personalization for you so that you can get more granular. You don't have to just settle for a dynamic field that just changes the program name. I mean, you can go in and have this be truly specific for individual programs. So that was a huge moment for me, that realization. And then, you know, we work with a lot of digital things. I have digital marketing in my background and started with digital marketing when I first came to ODU. All that digital platform stuff, websites, digital marketing, social, that already has so many inherently data-driven things in it. But I think that AI is improving the level of data that you get out of it. And I think it's democratizing again there as well, so that you don't, you know, you're always going to benefit from having on-staff expertise. You're always going to benefit from having a third party vendor that really knows it's if their stuff, if you, you know, on your team don't have that capacity inside. But I think there's such a huge opportunity to remove hurdles and generate greater volumes of granular content and then get data from that and actually have that be actionable.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that, you know, those ideas of being able to personalize and to actually get that actionable data out is so critical. I, like you, Dave, I did some experimenting similar way about this time last year, and I tried to do a proof of concept, and I found some kind of plugin that worked in Google Sheets that would actually turn, you know, you'd have almost like an ability to use ChatGPT for a function. And I was able to do a proof of concept. It was only with like three records, but I said, I want you to go in and write a custom paragraph for the email Comflow based on, you know, field X, field Y, field Z. So, you know, they were interested in music. They went, you know, did this, they did that. And so every paragraph that was unique to that individual was written. And I was like, okay, proof of concept. I could actually create a variable data piece in the database with a piece of code, ChatGPT code, that analyzes who they are, and it comes up with a kind of a postscript to the email that says, oh, by the way, Dave, you know, and it would it says, and so I think that's where things are going to be going, is that even our, you know, our name buys of 50,000 emails that we send out, we can actually get very personalized because we have enough data to know who they are. And we can, rather than just, you know, input high school name here, input this here, I can actually craft something a little bit more because I know who they are.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful. And having that be something that is no longer like out of reach, like you have to be the biggest university with the most funding and the biggest team, right, and all to be able to do that kind of stuff, like now being able to do that just with some skill and some time, much fewer resources to stand something like that up. There, I think that's going to build increasing pressure to do those things. I think,
yeah,
you know, in some ways we've had some luxury, like there are lower expectations in some ways with, you know, higher ed being able to do some of that because nobody is really doing that except some of the biggest institutions and the bigger non or the bigger for-profits, right, and things like that. But again, that democratization, right? It's such a huge revolution.
Yeah. And I would also just add a small thing here too, because I think a lot of people are excited about this personalization type thing. And I am just, and I just illustrated some of the ways that I'm doing it. But I also see people who say, oh, I've been playing with HeyGen and I see that I can create these avatars. And what if I create these students and then they talk to the person directly when we drop a video in? I don't think that's where I want to go with it, because then all of a sudden I swap out authenticity for personalization. And I think Gen Z is going to smell that and reject it. I think what AI is going to let us do is it's going to free up time to actually let us do true personalization, because we can analyze our data, analyze everything, and realize these are the top 50 people that we should really do a personal video with, an actual human, as opposed to trying to fake it with AI. And so I think that's more of where I see some of the personalization going. I'm just curious, what do you think?
Yeah, I think authenticity is a great word and a great challenge. I think lots of online institutions, you know, we talk about this on my team and within our department, the cliche, how do you illustrate online education? Well, it's a student with a smile, with a laptop, and that's it. And we're also kind of limited because none of, you know, our students are not physically on campus. They're not walking around in those spaces. They don't, you know, the dining hall and the library and all the game, none of that is applicable to their experience. So we don't want to use those kinds of images. So there's a point where everybody in that space, I think, is at one time or another having to use things like stock art. And so if you're using stock art, to me, there's not a very big leap from that to using AI generated imagery, as long as the quality is there, because at least now you've reduced the likelihood that somebody else is going to use the exact same image, which I have seen multiple times in my career across different institutions. Right. So there's that piece of it where I think, like, this doesn't really impact the authenticity factor so much. But yes, I think if you are actively starting to try to represent somebody as not, you know, like, you need to be clear, like, this is a bot, this is a chat thing, this is a, you know, versus like you're, you know, establishing what feels like a personalized relationship with somebody and then realizing like, oh shoot, that person doesn't even exist.
Exactly.
Right. It's interesting because that's the other thing, you know, like you hear about this in the entertainment space. Like we are not far away from having, you know, completely AI generated actors and music, and all these things are already in some small levels happening. And what does that do for a connection? But I think we really value authenticity at ODU. That's a real big part of our brand. And we don't want to lose that as we're embracing these modern tools.
Right. Just a side note, just because I think you'll find this interesting and our audience might too. You know, Sora was just released about a week ago from OpenAI. And if you're not familiar with that is, it's OpenAI's new prompt to videos. So you can now do a prompt, much like you can with ChatGPT or Midjourney or any of the other DALL-E 3. You can write a prompt that says, hey, I want a video of, you know, waves crashing against Big Sur in California. And it will generate a video of that happening. Tyler Perry, who many people will know from the Madea series, he actually was getting ready to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in a new film studio. He put that on pause when he saw that video demonstration, because I think he's starting to see 18 months, 36 months, what's going to happen to entertainment when somebody can just start to prompt and write something to create a whole new experience. And so there's going to be a lot of changes. I mean, that's where I keep telling people, you know, hey, if you've thought it's been a lot of changes in the last 18 months, buckle up, because it's only going to get more. And so I put that in the middle of all this. I know that might date this episode a little bit, but I think it's important for us to kind of take a step back and realize that we are all trying to figure out how to manage this change. That's probably the bigger skill set to walk away with in this conversation, is that, yes, let's figure out these tools. Let's play with these tools. Let's get comfortable. Let's get some literacy on campus. But at the same time, we've got to realize that it's going to be constantly changing. We got to hold everything loosely.
Yeah, 100%. I was just experimenting this week with text to music. It's astounding what you can do with a prompt across all these things. It's such a weird time, right? It feels like the early days of the internet, or the early days of, you know, these different digital revolutions that we've had. This feels like one, but it also feels like it's going to potentially touch so many things in such a broad way. Yeah, trying to find authenticity at the bottom is going to be, I think, an increasingly interesting challenge.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Dave, something that I'm sure that falls under your purview is brand consistency. So would love to know what you're doing as far as having AI be aligned with your brand's voice and tone. And are there any examples or maybe processes that you currently have to make sure that AI is aligned with your brand?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think AI tools, you know, just off the shelf can be powerful. But it's weird to use the word historically with something like ChatGPT. But I'm going to say historically until late last year, right? If you wanted to use ChatGPT, you either had to do one of two things. Either at the beginning of every single conversation, you had to start by telling ChatGPT who you were and what your brand was and all that kind of stuff. Or you could go in, if you had the pro account, you could go in and use custom instructions. And that gave you some ability to lock in some basic information so you wouldn't have to keep repeating yourself about who you are, what you want ChatGPT to provide, all that kind of stuff. But then late, I think it was just a little bit before Christmas in 2023, custom GPTs became a thing. And I'm super excited about this. At my organization, we're hopefully finalizing this month some updated branding work around position statements and different things like that, brand pillars. And so one of the first things I'm going to do is, once that's all dialed in, I'm going to take it into ChatGPT and build a custom GPT for our team to use that for content generation. there's a whole ecosystem springing up around these custom GPTs as well. That's a whole other thing, but it's pretty simple to get in there and at least start. If you go to your main ChatGPT Pro page, there's a Explore GPTs in the left nav, and then you click on that and you get a button that lets you create a new one, and you can go to town. You can tell it, you know, some things. It starts out asking you for a chat, kind of just like how you would normally do a ChatGPT dialogue, but it's asking you to describe what you would like to accomplish with this ChatGPT. And then there's a second tab where you can actually start putting in documents. I think the last time I tried this a few weeks ago, you're still limited to like 10 documents or something like that. And it wasn't doing a great job reading PDFs, but it would read Word docs. So you may have to do some copy and pasting and things like that. But that's, I think, a far more sophisticated way that's going to be really easily accessible. Again, you know, for that $20 a month pro account, you'll be able to go in and set and make sure that it has what your brand is. It has your tone of voice. It has the position things that you want to tile your content into. And this is the worst it's ever going to get, right? Like it's only going to improve from here. So I'm sure it will get even more sophisticated. But I do think to that authenticity point, you want this content to be tied to your brand. I think the people who I have seen most quickly bounce off ChatGPT are the people who go in with a free account. They type in one kind of basic prompt. They get something back and are like, huh? And then they go away. And if you spend even an hour experimenting and going deeper, you can realize like, no, there is actual utility here. And you can craft this so that instead of it being 20% close to what you want, it's 80% close right to what you want.
I often tell people to think about ChatGPT as an intern in your office.
Yes.
And the idea that if you told an intern, hey, write us a blog post about FAFSA, and that's all you told them, they would go and write you a blog post and it would not be anything what you were expecting. And you would not fire the intern on the spot. You would say, let's sit down and talk about this. And you would actually have a conversation. And at the end of having the conversation about, you know, I'd like it to be like this, I want it to be a little bit deeper, you might then say, do you have any questions for me? That's the way we do things in real life. And I think that's where I try to help people understand that that's why they call it ChatGPT.
Yes.
So that you can have a conversation with this large language model and invite it to ask you questions. And then when it asks you questions, it's going to be a lot closer to where you want it to be. And so that's where I try to help people understand that, yeah, if you have, you know, because I always ask people when I do my talks, how many of you use ChatGPT? And I have about 97% of the audience raises their hand. How many of you have the pro account? You pay for it. It goes down to like 3 people.
Yeah.
And I think it's because of that, that most people are like, Bart, what's the big deal? I mean, I tried it. It's okay. Maybe you programmer types like it. And I'm like, actually, no, you're not using it correctly. So if you happen to be in that bucket and listening today, I would go and act like it's an intern and talk to it more.
I love that analogy. I think another kind of aha moment for me was when I realized like, oh, I can tell it I don't like part of this. I can tell it, you know, it created 3 potential subject lines for me, and I can tell it I don't like this one, and it will strike that, and then it will remember that and keep that, you know, in its memory as it generates further responses. So
yeah,
all these opportunities to train it and to, like you're saying, treat it like chat. I love that. Treat it like an intern. That's such a great, valuable way to think about this.
One of the guys I follow on Instagram, I get all my news about AI through people I follow on Instagram. And one of the guys gave me a tip last night where he was like, one of the things that he adds to his chat prompts now is he gives it the prompt and then he says, no yapping. And so, because he says that sometimes chat gets to be very verbose because it wants to kind of prove that it understands something. And he says, if you just put it, and he showed 2 examples, you know, one that he let it do it, and then one where he said, and no yapping, it just kind of got right to the point and gave him exactly what he was looking for.
That's hilarious. I saw a white paper published back around Christmas, I think, that was talking about how it was an actual academic paper on prompt generation. Now that we're actually getting research out of this and some independent research. And they were talking about how if you bribed ChatGPT in their experience, you know, like tell it you'll tip it $500 and and it does literally change the response that you get. It's crazy. Yeah, I worry about like the day that this becomes sentient, right? Like you don't have to say please and thank you right now. And you can bribe and you can threaten and you can be rude, but like, man, what future are you setting yourself up for?
Exactly. Exactly. That's funny.
We've done a good job of making the case of why generative AI should be utilized heavily within a creative team. So to end our conversation, would there be a piece of advice that you could offer that someone that isn't using, or maybe they are, but something that they could implement right away that would move a brick for them and have relevancy for them in the immediate future?
Yeah, there's a couple levels where I'd answer this question. I think from a leadership level, you know, the innovators on your team are going to push around roadblocks and try to innovate in spite of whatever is going on. You run the risk of them potentially leaving if they feel like they're chafing all the time at and not getting opportunities to grow. I saw a recent stat that across all sectors, about 10% of people are being actively encouraged by their employers to use ChatGPT, and almost the same amount are being actively discouraged. Yeah. But 33% of people are reusing it anyway without their employer's knowledge. So the adoption is growing, certainly. But on the opposite end of those innovators, you have the skeptics and the curmudgeons who are going to be difficult to motivate. And sometimes you have to drag them a little bit into the future after a lot of convincing and change management kinds of things. But that leaves a huge population in the middle where your actions can directly impact and motivate. And, you know, I don't think any of us, Bart, I mean, you've done a great job of also talking about the concerns and considerations around these technologies. You know, like, don't be realistic about expecting perfection. Don't be uncritical of all of its potential uses or ignore ethical concerns. But it's really easy to unintentionally demotivate people. And so if you're in that leadership position, just, I would encourage, you know, how you lead really does matter. You have the power to foster an environment where taking calculated risks and exploring new ideas is encouraged and valued. And you can make it clear that you believe identifying and using new practices is a path to greater creative freedom and innovation. So I'd start there. And then just on a real more tactical level, Bart, we've talked about this before already on this call, but just this idea of that there's a significant difference between the free and paid versions of ChatGPT, to the point where I'd say you haven't really used ChatGPT if you don't have a pro account. It's a $20 kind of obvious tip maybe, but get yourself a pro account. And if possible, try to facilitate that for all of your team members, regardless of their role, because there's all sorts of countless administrative things that ChatGPT can also do to make work easier for your team. And then I would say just a next step is then seriously look into that custom GPT thing that you could maybe do for your brand to really empower the responses that you're getting from that the first time you put a prompt into ChatGPT.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We want to thank Dave Hunt, Director of Marketing Communications and Creative Director of Old Dominion's Global University, for being a part of the Higher Ed Marketer podcast. Dave, what's the best way to reach you for those who would like to do so?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. We talk about all this technology, and I pretty much have become the social media curmudgeon who only exists on LinkedIn. But you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect there. I'm Dave Hunt. And if you see Old Dominion University next to my name, you've got the right Dave.
Wonderful. Thank you for being part of our podcast and helping us make the case for AI. Bart, do you have any final thoughts that you would like to share?
I do. And we've had, I mean, such a great conversation, Dave. It's really a pleasure to have you on the show. I just want to kind of maybe echo a little bit of what Dave said there at the end about the encouraging you to go ahead and get the pro account. I mean, we don't have a dog in the hunt with OpenAI. I mean, it doesn't matter, but I think it does matter in the fact that you will see a vast different world if you are using the pro account, not only with the quality. I mean, I told somebody the other day, it's kind of like, you know, having a go-kart versus a really fast sports car. It's that kind of level of quality, but also it allows you to upload and interact with the world through vision and through voice on your mobile app, as well as being able to take pictures or upload data. So a couple use cases real quick that if you aren't aware, you can upload like enrollment data. I mean, make sure you remove the personal data out there, but you know, upload your Google Analytics, upload your social media analytics, and just start asking questions. It's like all of a sudden it becomes the data that you can actually just engage with and ask questions about it. And so I've enjoyed doing that. Another thing that I just did the other day, and Dave, I don't know if you've done this yet, but I took a post-it note with a Sharpie and I drew a rough idea of a logo that I wanted. And then I took a picture of it and I said, you know, basically to ChatGPT using Dolly, you know, take this sketch and turn it into a certain style of logo. And I was amazed with how quickly it was able to generate what I wanted, to at least get to a point where I could then vectorize it and throw it into Illustrator and play with it further. So little stuff like that, I think, is just where you start discovering that, wow, now that I am not bound by just text box and I can do all these other things, there's a lot of opportunity there. So, yeah. So I would just encourage you to do what Dave was talking about, get into the pro version, play with those multimodal ways of engaging with chat, as well as just being able to do the custom GPTs. And you can thank us later. I think that's going to be something good. So
I love that. Well, and thank you guys. This has been such a great highlight for my week to get to talk to you today.
Thanks for coming.
Our pleasure. The Higher Ed Marketer Podcast is brought to you with pride by Kaler Solutions, your specialists in the field of education, marketing, and branding. And by Ring Digital, the experts in ad targeting, known for significantly improving response and yield by accurately targeting ads to the devices of the individuals on your enrollment and fundraising lists. Also, we give a big shout out always to Rob Conlin and the entire team at Westport Studios for their support on a weekly basis. On behalf of myself, Troy Singer, Bart Kaler, and our distinguished guest, Dave Hunt, thank you for joining us.
You've been listening to The Higher Ed Marketer. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. The Higher Ed Marketer is a production of Kaler Solutions and Ring Digital in partnership with Westport Studios. Views and opinions expressed by guests on The Higher Ed Marketer are their own and may not reflect the views and opinions of their organization. Know someone who's a mover and a shaker in higher ed marketing? Visit www.higheredmarketerpodcast.com and click on our Contact Us page. We'd love to have you tell us about them. Until next time.